Good evening, lovelies. Welcome to another episode of Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. My creative tonight is author Alice Faye Duncan. Alice is here with me tonight to talk about her new book coming out about the wonderful Miss Obelie. Obelie is the grandmother of Juneteenth, and Alice's book is called Obelie and What It Means to Be Free. Alice is a children's author. She has written books on historical events in a way that children can not only comprehend but embrace and share amongst themselves and share with other people. You can order the Opaly and What It Means to Be Free, as well as Evicted, which is the struggle for the right to vote. Head over to alicefayduncan.com and pre-order these books. Even if you don't have children, order them and give them to a child you know. You can donate them to your local library, to your local children's hospital, or local school. This episode is sponsored by Esther Greaves of Glad Heart Realty. Esther has been serving the residential real estate market in Kansas City Metro since 2006. She is licensed in both Kansas and Missouri. Her local areas include South Kansas City, Downtown Kansas City, Leawood, Overland Park, Lee's Summit, and Cass County. So for all your residential real estate needs in Kansas or Missouri, contact Esther over at gladheartrealty.com. Thank you so much for sponsoring this show with Alice Faye Duncan. Now, grab a cup of coffee or your favorite beverage, cuddle up with your host pup, and enjoy the show. Hello, Miss Alice.
Hey, Miss Pop, how are you doing this afternoon?
It's been a crazy day, but we're getting there. We're getting there.
All right. Well, I am delighted to speak with you today.
Me too. You have written a book about one of my favorite people in the whole entire world. Incredibly stoked to talk to you.
Okay. Well, this is awesome. Grandmother Obelie is one of my favorite people.
Absolutely.
Now that I have met her over the phone, rather, and like researched and delved into her story.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you could not think of a more determined and lively and loving and unifying spirit.
I like that you said determined, stubborn.
Yeah, she
very stubborn.
She had a goal, she had a dream, and she kept walking until she achieved it. It is most uncanny what she did and how she was able to just galvanize just such a myriad of people from so many different spaces in the world, in the nation, to join her in her in her vision. It was awesome.
Yes, and she was so, well, not was, she's still here with us, people.
Absolutely.
she is so inspirational and stubborn in a good way for her cause that she just wasn't going to quit. And it's so funny. You're right. She touched so many people and inspired so many people to join with her and to fight with her for this. People were planning across the United States to have their drive or to have their walk when it was signed into law. And it was just so funny because I had spoken to her and was blessed enough to have a conversation with her. And she was certain. She was absolutely certain that it was going to happen this year. She knew it. And sure enough, and the picture on the internet where she's bent down talking to President Biden as he's signing it, I said, there's that look. There's our sassy girl right there. She's going, I told you.
And she, I mean, you know, she made it happen. She and her Lord, I mean, you know, because she's a very God-fearing, God-loving, praying woman. And, you know, and the Lord smiled on her.
Absolutely. And she's 95 now?
Let's see. She was born, I think, in 1990. She was born in 1927, I do believe.
So 94.
No, she wasn't. She was born October 7th, 1926. So if you do the math, I'm not even gonna dare do the math right now. But she was born
95.
Right.
95.
Yeah.
And people need to realize 95. Okay. and she's out there walking for something she believes so passionately. I get winded walking to the mailbox. You know, come on. People want to sit on the internet and complain and fuss and, you know, do this, that, or the other, but get out there and do something. If a 95-year-old woman can walk, I forget how many miles it was, for years, every year for this.
Yeah, since
you can get off your keyboard, yeah, you know.
Since 2016,
yes,
she had honored the holiday with a pilgrimage,
mm-hmm,
you know, and collecting signatures on the way and just traveling. At some point, it became like beyond the walk. And so they would simply, her and her granddaughter, they would, mm-hmm, travel to a variety of cities and then do like a symbolic walk of 2.5 miles to they would do those symbolic walks to represent the 2.5 years delay that it was before the enslaved in Texas, you know, received notice that emancipation had come.
Right, right. And a lot of people, we did a round table with her, and it was people of different, it was diverse. It was different cultures, mm-hmm, represented in the round table. And the majority of people didn't know that. They didn't know. And I spoke with another woman who has an amazing documentary out right now. And she brought up a really good question. Why don't we have a celebration of the actual Emancipation Day? And I, mm-hmm, said, well,
you know what the actual Emancipation Day would be? It would actually be January the 1st, because emancipation came January 1st, 1863.
Mm-hmm.
And so that would be, so that goes into an African-American culture. And so to your friend's point, that holiday would actually be like New Year's Eve, because emancipation was officially January 1st, 1863. And so in African-American culture, in the religious culture, there is this thing that they have on New Year's Eve night, which is called quote unquote watch meet or watch night service. And what that was is like during the day, you know, before emancipation, it is the night that the enslaved are gathered to watch freedom come that morning at midnight at January 1, 1863. And so in the Black community, whether African Americans realize it or not, when they are engaged in a watch meet service, that watch meet service, that watch night service is actually a event that was first practiced with the forthcoming of that first Emancipation Day, which was January 1st, 1863.
Yeah, so it's kind of symbolic or a remembrance, like a reenactment of the waiting.
Right. When we say watch meet or watch night, it is a, like, but it's like, it's something that's unbeknownst to,
right,
the people practicing it. You know, it's sort of like, you might have rituals in your family where your mom, your dad, they do these things maybe ritualistically because it was something that their parents did, but you never know the background of why you do it that way, right? Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. And so for many African Americans, they have been going to church on New Year's Eve for, you know, decades, never understanding that the ritual is a byproduct of that very first Emancipation Day.
Okay, so there may be kids out there that all they know is they go to church every New Year's Eve.
Kids and adults, all they know is that they go to church and they stay on New Year's Eve and they stay until midnight when, you know, when the new year comes, and they know that they call that service watch meet night, and then they know that during that service, they're going to be people who are going to stand up, what they call, and give testimonies. Mm-hmm. They stand up and they do what they call testify. And those people will talk about how good God has been and what all has been achieved during the last year. and how, you know, how many mountains they have climbed during the last year. But as they are practicing that in the culture, few of them have an understanding that that watch meet, watch night is not necessarily in the culture. It was us watching for the new year to come. We were watching for freedom to come on January 1, 1863.
So it's a tradition where they might not know specifically where it originated
right,
from.
Specifically, they might not know. So for example, even when you look at Juneteenth as a holiday, and you know, people make jokes about African-Americans and red Kool-Aid, and people make jokes about African-Americans and watermelon. But if you look at that Juneteenth tradition, the tradition was on Juneteenth, you would celebrate the day with those rich foods that were not available to you when you were enslaved. And so you would have barbecue, and you would have like the best of the fruits, which would be watermelon. And you would have a celebration of fruit punch and libations, right? And so, you know, you wonder, well, where did that joke come from? But it could actually be some reference to those Juneteenth celebrations.
Right. And Miss Opal said that. She said when they got the news, they set out the tables, they got the musicians, they put out the food, and they celebrated and they ate, she said. So it's so strange to me because
you understand the reason that the buffet and the celebration is there is because when they were enslaved, they were prevented. They only received the offal, right? So they were really prevented of having the best of the delicacies. And so the day celebrates freedom of movement, freedom of naming ourselves, freedom of being able to enjoy whatever is considered the best of life, because we now have liberation.
Well, that as well as the freedom to interact with your friends and your family and your
right
your,
to go right the freedom yeah. to move and have your being you know, to move, breathe, and have your being as you wish it to be, to not be relegated to a plantation or a very small confined space, the freedom to travel and go where you want to go without someone speaking on your behalf, giving you permission. Yeah.
All right. Or just the right to basic human comforts and pleasures and just the like you said, the ability to eat things rather than just like a porridge or salt pork, or, you know, to have flavors and to have experiences, just a basic human right to have.
The basic right to name your child what you wish to name your child.
Yes.
The basic right to get married because you want to get married. The basic right to keep custody of your children and not to be separated from your child or your spouse, you know?
Right. And it's so twisted that things, and like you said, the joke about the watermelon or the Kool-Aid or fried chicken, you know, whatever stupid, you know,
and that is
insulting jokes that people
prevented. They were prevented from having access to those things. So those were also the things that they coveted, you know?
Right. Well, yeah. I mean, again, another human, a basic human desire is to want what you can't have. But to such an extreme. And I want to ask a question, and you please tell me straight off if I come across offensively at all, but it's just something that popped into my head. Do you feel, because we know that African-American Black people, they can cook, they like the spices, they like the seasonings. Do you think that that harkens back to that, to no, where that they weren't allowed that?
That harkens back to Africa.
Okay.
Yeah, that harkens back to Africa. Now,
I go off on tangents because you'll say something interesting and then I get questions.
Okay.
But yes, so that was just something that popped in my head because you said that they were given just the the worst of things, and maybe salt, you know? So I just, that was something I wondered. And again, I absolutely never, ever mean offensive, if anything, when I ask a question. No. It's because I don't know.
Mm-mm, not at all. Not at all.
But speaking of the wonderful, absolutely beautiful Miss Opal Lee, I read up first on you, and you knew from a relatively early age you wanted to write, but you also knew that wasn't necessarily a financially stable career path, right?
Exactly. Exactly.
Was it your mom that said, okay, well, you know, I'll pay for your school. And then you wanted to go a little further. And your dad was like, well, you're on your own, hun.
Right. And so here's the thing. I knew from a very young age, like third grade, I was writing. And then sixth grade, I had an encounter with Etheridge Knight. He was an African-American poet born in Corinth, Mississippi, had lived in Indianapolis, was a veteran from the war. And he was a part of this art program. He had come to my sixth grade class. And when he shared with us his books and he shared with us that he was publishing and he was African-American, I was like, oh, there is a possibility that I too can like write as a profession, right? But then as I grew, I realized that writing as a profession was not the most lucrative thing. And my parents made it very clear that I was going to go to college. My mother made it very clear that she was going to pay for it. And then when I realized that, you know, even with a college degree, in order for me to like work in a library and to, you know, to make a living, I needed to go to library school. And so, you know, I was going to ask my mother to pay for that as well. And my father was like, you can't do that. And I'm not going to allow you to do that. And so, you know, so I ended up going to college I ended up going to graduate school on fellowship, and became a school librarian and began writing, you know, after school, writing on vacation, doing all of those school breaks and things. And I'm still working as an educator and I'm still writing. You know, those are the two constants that have been in my life, right. Working as an educator and writing. And so the way that the Juneteenth book, because I'm now the author of the new picture book biography of Opal Lee, who is the grandmother of Juneteenth. And the name of that picture book biography is The True Story of the Grandmother of Juneteenth. And the way that book came to me is an editor realized in the summer of 2020, when the whole nation turned their attention to Juneteenth with help from Opal Lee and the publicity of her march. The editor was like, Alice, you know, I like your work, because I'm also the author of a book called Memphis, Martin, and the Mountaintop, which is the exploration of Dr. King's assassination. And so the editor was pleased with what she had seen me do with that book and thought I would be an ideal writer for the Opal Lee book. And so I went and began to research Opal Lee's life in order to shape her story. I had an opportunity to interview her in order to shape her story. And so from the interview, from the research, I was able to create this very concise and lyrical story that in one regard is the pictorial biography of Opal Lee and her life as an activist who had survived racial terror in Texas. But then in another regard, the story is an historical overview or summary of Juneteenth and how it came to be and why it is important. So when we talk about Juneteenth and when we talk about Miss Opal Lee, what we ultimately what Opal Lee ultimately wants people to understand is that Juneteenth is not divisive. It is not a day that this is Black folks' holiday. That is not what Juneteenth represents. And when when Opal Lee was going to Congress and speaking to senators and congressmen and congress ladies, she wanted it to be very clear that this holiday needs to be a national one, because it is one that unifies the nation in liberation for all people, right? And so, because her premise also is no one is free until everyone is free. And so when we gather on Juneteenth Day, it is a day that people from all cultures and all races get together to celebrate. Yes, we celebrate Juneteenth, but we are celebrating liberation and democracy for all. Juneteenth means unity, one and all.
Right. And I feel like that might be a misconception, that it's like, another Black holiday. Well, listen, if you don't feel led to celebrate Juneteenth, as you said, a day of unity, a day of liberation, you are part of the problem, in my personal opinion, to anybody listening. That's my personal opinion. If you have a problem with the celebration of millions of humans being liberated, I have words. No, I'm sorry, I lost my track. I got passionate for a minute. I'm sorry.
It's not a problem. But you know, one of the things is when I think about the book, and when I think about what the book can do for young children, because it's a very spare book. It's a very lyrical book. And before our time is over, I'm going to read an excerpt from the book to your listeners. But what I think it really does is it allows young children at a very young age to understand that, you know, the Bible says it this way, between the Cain and Abel, you know, it's like, am I my brother's keeper? And so what the book explains to young children at a very young age is that we are our brothers and our sisters' keeper. And that whenever we see people in our community, in our school, in our nation, when we see them and they are hurting or they are without access to freedom and democracy, then we must use our agency. And children have power. We must use our agency and our power and our privilege to make sure that we help our brothers and sisters who do not have access to the things they need. And so, I mean, it just, and it can be something very small. So the book looks at Opal Lee and looks at, you know, her life in the Jim Crow South. But when a child reads the book and the simplicity of the book, the child can see the bigger picture, because we have children who are going to school with children who are not having lunch, children who do not have coats for winter, children who do not have adequate clothing for summer, children who do not have, you know, adequate shoes. And so children who sometimes are being bullied or isolated and alienated and are without the sustaining power of friendships. And so children can then see, oh, it's more ways to show up and to help and to care for people beyond the social, you know, beyond the social context of this book. That it just, in a very simplistic way, it allows children to see the bigger picture, that we are responsible for each other. As Gwendolyn Brooks would say, we are, you know, each other's magnitude and bond. I think that's, I might be misquoting her, but that's what I think that quote is.
That's beautiful. And one of the reasons I was so excited to talk to you, besides the Ms. Opoli connection, because again, I love her, was this is a children's book. And not to quote Whitney Houston, but children are the future. I mean, we cannot deny that. We cannot. And the decisions that are going to be made over the next decade or two that are going to affect the course of America are going to be made by these young people, children, preteens that are reading and learning now. And I would love for them not to get their information from the internet and social media sites, because the day that Juneteenth, it was signed into law, boy, didn't Twitter explode. And I was so disheartened by the negativity from people. This is just a bone. This is to shut us up. This is this, this is that. And I refrained because I really wanted to dive down deep, but it wasn't my place to say anything, but it was so disheartening. So when I see that wonderful people like you are writing books or, you know, speaking knowledgeably and accurately about things so that children can learn the right things, not what they see on Twitter, you know, or what they hear their uncle, you know, their 20-year-old uncle spouting. It touches me and it makes me hopeful. You know what I mean?
Right. And it makes me hopeful. It makes me hopeful to still have elders, to still have elders in the world like mm-hmm. Opal Lee, who can speak directly to children and who can speak directly to adults mm-hmm. to give them inspiration to do that which is right. Because sometimes it just takes one voice to speak into your life, you know, to set you on a path of destiny. And also, I mean, it's the reason that I write. Sometimes it only takes one book to inspire a child and to mm-hmm. point them in the direction of their destiny. For me, it was that one poet, Etheridge Knight, who showed up in school that one day during sixth grade to say that he published books and he wrote books for a living, that then opened my mind and allowed me to receive the idea that I too can publish books and make a living from writing, which had never really, you know, because up until that time of seeing Etheridge Knight, it was like, hey, all of the poets that, you know, that I'm reading in school, they're all dead, right? All of the writers that I'm reading in school, they're all dead. But then here, this living and breathing African-American man shows up and he looks like my father. He looks like my uncles. And mm-hmm. he's saying, yeah, you know what? I'm writing poetry and I'm making a living and I am a poet. And right. then he also began to share with us about Gwendolyn Brooks, who I just quoted earlier, who was his literary mother. She was actually the person who got him published, got him his first publishing deal. And so that's how I approach my books. I approach my books as things that are living and alive, and they have the potential to inspire children in their destiny. And they have, you know, and they have been created to give them knowledge and you know, to give them knowledge and to edify them, you know, intellectually, emotionally, spiritually.
Right.
So that, you know, just, that's all right.
Yeah. And to spark an interest in a subject that they hopefully dig deeper into.
Right. I mean, right. That's another reason that I write. I write because for the most part, if you look at the particular books that I have written, Memphis Martin and the Mountaintop, for example, explores the assassination of Dr. King. And that in picture books for children before my book had not been explored in a book for a younger audience. I have a new book called Evicted, The Struggle for the Right to Vote. A picture book for middle school, high school, but there is not one picture book about the voting rights struggle in a place called Fayette County, Tennessee, which becomes the very voting rights struggle that inspires John Lewis and his college peers in the early 60s to go into the rural South and organize a voters registration drive. And so, and then I have a book about a song for Gwendolyn Brooks. Up until my book, there was not one picture book about the triumphant life of Gwendolyn Brooks, who is the first Pulitzer Prize winner. And then we go to Juneteenth. Juneteenth had several picture books on the market at the time, but there was not one picture book that specifically looked at the life of Opal Lee and how she specifically had championed Juneteenth being a national holiday through her walking efforts. And so, you know, I write because I want to inspire children. I want to, I want them to receive something that sparks their idea or vision about their future and what they want to do with their lives. But also I write because if we do not record the histories that are somewhat difficult, like understanding Juneteenth, like understanding voting rights, like understanding the assassination of Dr. King, if we don't write and record those histories specifically for children, there are then people in the world who will say it did not happen. If we don't have books about the Holocaust, there are people who are in the world who will say the Holocaust did not happen. If we don't have books about the institution of American slavery, there are people in the world who will say slavery did not happen. And so if we don't have a book about Juneteenth, there are people who will say, Juneteenth, no such thing. It did not happen. But we now have books. Parents, teachers can now share these books with children so that the children are informed. And when a child is informed, when a child is literate, a child then is a critical thinker. And what do critical thinkers become? Critical thinkers then become educated voters. And that is the reason for education. The reason for education is to shape a child who will be, as you said so eloquently, the future and will lead the future and will go and correct the misdeeds of the past. That is the point of having an educated child. And that is also the point of a lot of, at this time, a lot of the book banners, those who are banning books now, at, you know, is that they do not want children to be fully educated. They're talking about critical race theory, but what they're really doing is, they are preventing us from having critical thinkers, you know? And that is the point of education, to make children critical thinkers so that they can be independent learners, leading and living according to their own terms that they understand is right, you know?
I feel sometimes that people are trying to raise children to be adults that don't question or don't talk back, for lack of a better word. They don't question what they're told. And I think that's very sad. I think absolutely you should feel freedom as a child to say, well, you know, that's not actually how it went down, kind of thing. That's not historically accurate. Well, it's in the book. I don't care what's in the school book. It's not what happened. And I know that in our school systems right now, not to go on a tangent, I promise, but in our school systems right now, a lot, and you know this as an educator, a lot of what's in the textbook, and it's so funny you said dead poets, were written by white straight males, and it really needs to be evaluated. And I think books like yours are really is a really amazing step in the right direction, because kids are not getting accurate historical education.
Well, and it is by the commitment of omission, right? It is by omission and then sometimes just error, right? But for the most part, it's omission. And that's what the book banning movement right now, or the banning of books movement is about right now. It's like, okay, let's omit this. Let's not let this in the child's worldview. Because if we omit this and don't allow this in the child's worldview, then the child will not receive this education. It is a preservation of ignorance, right? But right. At some point, it's analogous. It's really analogous to, like, back in the quote unquote olden days, you would have in my community, you would have, you know, religious grandmothers and religious grandfathers who would not allow the children to listen to secular radio.
Mm-hmm.
Because, you know, on secular radio, you know, they're going to be talking about sex, right?
Okay.
And you would go to school with kids who would, like, you know, my mama say I can't listen to the radio. So they've never heard Luther Vandross, or they've never heard Diana Ross and the Supremes, right? But at a certain point, the child gets old enough to turn on the radio for herself, for himself, and there's Luther, and there is Diana Ross and the Supremes, right? And there is the Isley Brothers, and there is all of this array of music talking about love and all of the things that the parents attempted to keep from the child. So you can omit the history from the books as long as you want to, but at some point, a child who is seeking is going to discover the information. I was recently interviewed by someone. We were talking about my books, and that person began to speak about the parochial education that they had, and how there were so many things during that parochial education that had just been omitted and just not shared. But then when they went to college, they encountered all of this information. And once they had all of the information as a resource, they then had a different behavior and a different response to life and how they wanted to live their life and be in community with others who were not like them. And so you can omit or ban the books as long as you like, but at some point the children are gonna dance to Luther Vandross, honey.
Yeah. Right. Wait till they find Barry White.
I know. I know. And there will be grandchildren, but then
yeah. But yeah, it's a real problem in the school systems. And you're right, kids are gonna. If you ever have tried to hide Christmas presents from your child, you know that they can find stuff out. So yeah, I just wish it was a little more less omission. But you're right, it's gonna take time, and kids are gonna they're gonna figure it out. And
yeah, and the thing is, people are going to be people.
Go ahead. I'm sorry.
Yeah, whenever people are fearful, I mean, because I'm just, if you look at we talked about those children who could not listen to the radio, right? The parents really are just they were operating in fear and did not want children to have access to a knowledge before they felt that they were, old enough to deal with that information, right? And so the book banning thing is about fear. It's about control. And so we just pray that at some point there will be an awakening for those people, because when you know better, you do better.
Right.
So we hope that, you know, that this this embrace of ignorance, we pray that it will not, we pray that it will be disbanded soon, with librarians and parents and educators and politicians working to preserve democracy.
Right.
And voters, just regular old Joe Blow voters working to preserve democracy.
Right. And it's amazing to me. This is a childhood memory to me. When I thought of asking a question that I didn't know in the school setting. To me, the lady working in the library had to have had all the answers, because why? Because she had all the books, right? Mm-hmm. So I love that you're in this position where you're the librarian as well as a writer, writing these amazing books. And I don't want to call them educational, and I made air quotes.
No, they're not. I mean, they're not educational books. I mean, I write a variety of, is that a word? I write a variety. That's it. I write a variety of books that are, you know, fiction, picture book, fiction books, nonfiction books, historical fiction books. So my books are not, they are not like scholarly, they're not like, yeah, not scholarly textbooks.
They're enlightening. They're enlightening rather than educational. Yeah.
Yeah, but they are picture books. So they're illustrated histories of the ones that are talking about histories. They're illustrated histories. And then the ones that are fiction, they're illustrated stories. So, and they're lyrical. So like, I'm going to read for you.
Mm-hmm.
I'm going to read for you parts of the true story of the grandmother of Juneteenth, Opal Lee, and what it means to be free. This is my new book about Opal Lee, and then it gives some history. And you will see it's lyrical, it's light, it's lyrical, it's light in terms of wordiness. Right. It's not bombarded, and it's fun to read, and it's sort of done like a call and response.
Oh,
okay. And it goes like this: Happy Juneteenth Jamboree! Come and join the fun. Opal Lee waved to her great grandson as he barreled across the park. He zipped past lines of picnic tables covered with platters of barbecue, baked beans, tomato tarts, and raspberry cobbler.
Mm.
He hurried past the leaping choir draped in purple robes. He danced a jig with cowboys playing fiddles, but they did not stop his flow. Buddy ran to the blooming tree where Opal Lee held court. Her braided hair was a silver crown. Her eyes were twinkling stars. Great grandeur, Buddy called. Tell us a Juneteenth story. Opal Lee raised her face to the sun as memories of yesteryear filled her vision. When she had been a Texas bud like the children at her feet, Granddaddy Zach told freedom stories on his wooden porch. As Opal Lee remembered his words, she lifted her hands and cheered. Juneteenth means freedom, and now it's story time. Mm-hmm. Then Opal Lee began.
I love that.
And from there, Opal Lee begins to tell you her story about how she, you know, how life was when she grew up as a child. And then she begins to tell the children, the Juneteenth story, the actual Juneteenth story and history of what happens in 1865, on June 19th, 1865. When General Gordon Granger comes to Galveston to announce that freedom has come for all of those who are enslaved.
The imagery that you set up just with the words, I mean, because you can running and skipping and dodging and
the food on the table. And the festival in the park. Yeah. And, you know, on Juneteenth, there's always going to be across the nation, people are having festivals, and they're having music, and they're having picnics, and they're having bands, and they're having choirs, and they're having, you know, cheering, and they're having all kinds of Olympic-like, you know, physical contest of running, jumping, skipping. It's fun. And then another thing about Juneteenth that people don't discuss often is, you know, there is all of the celebration and the liveliness of it, but Juneteenth also is a time of reflection. It can have a somber, it has a joyful tone, but it also should have a somber tone, where people are allowed to remember and to reflect about what was lost prior to Juneteenth, right? And so, you know, it's a time to remember that at one time, yes, that we were enslaved. At one time, yes, we could not name ourselves. At one time, yes, we were not free to travel. At one time, yes, as African Americans, we were not free to worship, or to be families, or to live in a family unit. And so you reflect on that, but then as you reflect on that, then you rejoice because here we are alive, well, you know, operating in our own personal agency. But at the same time where that is, Juneteenth is a time, remember, it's a time that we are celebrating liberation worldwide. And so we remember our brothers and sisters in parts of the world who are still, you know, who are still, well, liberation is an ongoing struggle. So we just remember those people in parts of the world who are still, you know, meeting freedom to come. And then as we also in America, you know, work to retain the freedoms that we have, like voting rights, you know, like fair housing, like, you know, free education, because these things are being attacked day by day.
Right. And Miss Opalee herself says that Juneteenth is not the end. She speaks out about the homeless. She speaks about the hungry. Right. Anyone who's oppressed or suffering.
Right. And right. And she feeds, you know, in her personal ministry now, she feeds mm-hmm. and clothes the homeless, and she's raising a garden in Texas where, you know, the produce goes to those who are living in food deserts and things. And so, you know, her life is a light and a lamp for us all to use, you know, as a showing us the way, you know, showing us the way that is possible for us to care and help right. others.
Right. And I feel like your book, as well as being historical and also the Martin Luther King, you know, the historical, but this book about Miss Opalee, it's also acting kind of as like a moral compass, like not pointing a finger in a bad way, but pointing a finger towards someone that you can look up to, that you can try to emulate and be like, if you, you know, it's right. like, hey, look at this right. amazing person. Look at this.
Right. You know. She's an inspiration. Adults, when they're making plans to really become great business leaders, and they have these plans that they want to become millionaires,
right?
All of them say the same thing. They say that they go and they read the biographies of those who have already become millionaires, right? Mm-hmm. And so that is what, you know, that is what biographies, picture book biographies do for young children. It gives them a template, or it gives them a, is it the word prototype? It gives them a template. It gives them a prototype. It gives them, you know, a role model.
Right.
To follow, you know, as they also develop their own personalities, you know, like, so everybody's not going to be a Daniel Hale. So everybody's not going to be a doctor. Some people are going to be lawyers. Some people are going to be activists. Some people are going to be teachers. Some people are going to be poets. Some people are going to be singers, right? And right. so you share with them the Beyonce picture book biography. Some people are going to be activists. You share with them the Opalee picture book biography. Some people are going to be poets. You share with them my book, A Song for Gwendolyn Brooks, you know, a picture book biography about a poet. And so that is what good literature does. It inspires, you know.
Absolutely.
Yeah, it inspires and it shapes thinking so children can be independent, you know, they can be independent thinkers on their own. If I have read a book about Opalee, but then I encounter a friend who wants me to be prejudiced, but I so admire this feel good, you know, wonderful spirited book about Opal Lee, then that book allows me, that book then becomes sort of like a vaccine, actually.
Right.
You know, the book becomes somewhat like a vaccine. So while I'm receiving this negative word, right? Or this negative word, then I have this book that is repelling it, so that the word, this negative word that I'm receiving, does not rest on me, right? Yeah. More books in 2022.
Right, exactly. Say yes to all the books. But it is strange because I feel like people take the printed word, or in, you know, today's day and age, the words they see on a computer over, you know, like you, in your example, you said a person wants to tell you, oh, you need to be prejudiced. Well, you're holding that book. To me, the book is more educated than you are, because it's a book, or, you know, it's a paper that was published on the internet.
Well, that's
for good or bad, though.
Okay. And so then that's why every school needs a school librarian also.
Yes, ma'am.
Because mm-hmm. school librarians teach literacy skills. So school librarians teach you how to evaluate information on the internet. It teaches you how to determine if a source is a school librarian teaches you how to determine if a source is credible or not. And then the wave of education, you know, state governments trying to eliminate or defund school libraries, remove school librarians. It's egregious and it's heartbreaking. But those of us who feel passionate about books, about there being school librarians, about voting, because you know that the reason you get the particular politicians you have is because of voting or a lack thereof, right?
Right.
So then we just need to everyone do their part, do what you're called to do, so we can all preserve democracy. Because if we blink, we might just blink and it'll be gone. And you know, everybody likes the Hunger Games, and everybody likes Insurgent and Divergent, but we just
Harry Potter,
blink.
Yeah,
and we just might blink and we'll be living in a dystopia. And you know, the coronavirus has already, you know, brought us very close to feeling like that, you know. But things are transpiring, and it can be very frightening. But if everybody does their part, then, you know, Opal Lee's vision that all of us will be free at some point, you know, that vision will be an actuality if we all just do our part. Find what your talents, find what your gifts are, maximize them, and use them for the good of humanity, and it shall be well.
Right. I love that. I love that you said that, because it's not enough to read something and just blindly believe it to be absolute fact, because that's a lot of the problems with, as we were discussing earlier, with the history that we were taught.
And here's the thing for the adults who are like, you know, staying glued to the internet, the adults themselves do not know how to evaluate a site to determine if it is credible. And so, you know, you've got all of this misinformation going around and infiltrating people's thinking and shaping their thoughts, because the adults themselves never learned how to evaluate a source as credible, you know? So
that's a definite skill kids need to learn alongside.
They need to learn it, like, you know, pre-K, mm-hmm. 12th grade. They need to learn it, surely.
Right. More than comprehension, just they're the innate ability to decide what's stuff and what's nonsense, you know?
Yeah, what's credible and what's not, you know?
Exactly. The book is The True Story of the Grandmother of Juneteenth, Opal Lee and What It Means to Be Free.
The release date for that book is going to be January 11th. I don't know when your program is going to air, but I would encourage all of your listeners, if this program airs before January 11th, I would encourage all of your listeners to pre-order the book and donate it to a child in your community. If you don't have children, donate it to a child in your community, or donate it to a school, or donate it to a children's hospital, because, you know, children's hospitals, you know, oftentimes they give books away to the children who are there. And just like, if you don't have children, purchase the book to give it to a child. Make your contribution to literacy. Make your contribution to critical thinking. Also, a fun thing about this book, not only is it a call and response, but to make the book completely interactive, there is a Juneteenth red punch recipe in the book that parents and teachers can make with the children. And the name of it is, it's called Juneteenth Red Punch Strawberry Lemonade. Because, you know, on Juneteenth, color of the foods are red to indicate, you know, the spirit and of the day, and to also represent the wonderful foods and cuisines that were not enjoyed when the people were enslaved. So yeah, so it's a fun book in that, you know, you've got a recipe that kids and parents can make together. And it's simple, like if a kid can read, then, and you know, you don't necessarily have to have anything, electric to do it. They can just use, you know, punch bowls
And doesn't it make a little kid feel so like grown up when they're following a recipe or doing
and
something?
And they're following instructions and everything. Yeah. And they can present the punch to their parents or their grandma and granddad. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah.
So it can be pre-ordered via Amazon. That's right.
Yes. Well, it can be pre-ordered and, you know, go local, support local if you can. It can be pre-ordered wherever books are sold. So if you like Amazon, go to Amazon. But also if you want to, if you're in Texas or if you're in Florida and you have a favorite independent bookstore, then go to your favorite independent bookstore and you can call them and pre-order it, or you can pre-order it on their online website if they have one. And just, you know, books are the gifts that keep on giving.
Absolutely.
They're the books that they are the gifts that never grow old. Books are the gifts that never fade.
Right.
And so also, if you want to counter the banning of books at this hour, then give children books that share with them a history that you know must be preserved, that you know must be celebrated and remembered. Because if you don't, there are people who will say, what? It never happened.
Exactly. They need the ammunition that books and correct books and educated books and enlightened books provide. Absolutely. And they can also go to your website, alicefayduncan.com.
Yes. Visit me in Tennessee. It's www.alicefayduncan.com. And there you will find an assortment of other books that I have written about historical events that are seldom explored in books for young readers. And you can also find some of my baby books, some read aloud sing-along books that that are pretty popular as baby shower gifts.
Oh, and honestly, that would be an amazing baby shower gift. Books and diapers.
Yes, books are amazing baby shower gifts, for sure, for sure.
Ms. Alice, it has been a pleasure speaking with you, and I'm excited to go and order basically all of your books.
Well, it has been a plum pleasing pleasure to speak with you, Miss Pup. And I pray that your holiday season is full of wonder, peace, and joy, and love, and happiness. God bless you. Thank you so much for having me.
Oh, you're welcome. Thank you so much for being here. And you have a pleasant holiday season, too.
All righty. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.
Thank you guys so much for listening. I hope you enjoyed my conversation with Alice Faye Duncan. Head over to alicefaeduncan.com, pre-order the books that are coming out January 2022. There's also a new book coming out summer of 2022. While you're there, go ahead and place an order for her previous books because all of them are amazing tales based on historical facts, historical figures, and people of importance that children really should be learning about. Thank you so much to my sponsor, Esther Greaves with Gladheart Realty, gladheartrealty.com. Talk to Esther for all your residential Kansas and Missouri real estate needs. If you like the music you're hearing, head over to RaleighKeegan.com. Raleigh has a new album out called Clocks Roll Forward, and it is some of the best new music that I've heard in a long time. You can order a CD, you can hear his live version of the album, and you can hear his new Christmas single. You can also get information on upcoming tour dates. While you're at it, head over to BeUnique.org, like, follow, and support my beautiful humans over there. You can find me on social media. I'm Pup Duffy pretty much everywhere. You can follow the show on Facebook. It's Coffee, Candy, and Creatives. As always, love each other, look out for each other, take care of yourselves, and I'll see you next time.